and welcome to the Amy Edwards Show. I'm your host, Amy Edwards, and I'm thrilled that you're here today because we're here to uplevel our lives in the most inflow way possible. So just listening to these shows, I always say that you're showing up and taking those steps to show that you're like ready for whatever is next, ready to surrender what comes your way. So as I'm always working on. So yay. I don't have too much business up top. I'm just excited to actually be sitting down with today's guest in person because we've tried to make this happen so many times. So welcome with me today, Doug Cartwright. Doug, you are a speaker. You are the founder of Alchemy Sales Coaching and the author of Holy Shit, We're Alive.
Can you believe it?
Did you like my delivery of your title?
You nailed it.
How do you usually say it? Do you say it different ways? You go like, holy shit, we're alive.
Or there's so many different contexts to say it.
Holy shit.
Sometimes yeah. It's a whisper. Get a reminder. Remember.
That's right. Yeah. Now what?
Now what?
And then there's
now
what this, do we do? Your little subtitle. Now
yeah.
What? Now what?
Yeah.
So I knew we had a copy of this.
Yeah.
And so I was rooting around finding it and I was like, oh, he signed it. We have a signed copy and it says, trust the universe. Do you sign them all that way?
I do.
You do.
You do.
So, you know, I thought I'd start with that because first of all, I'm just so glad that we got to do this.
I know,
thank you
so
for
fun.
Making time.
Yeah, you're thanks just for hosting me.
Passing through town and
I had to pop in.
Just staying in the room right there. Mm-hmm. So here we are. Okay, so you write Trust the Universe. And I feel like the word universe is just tossed around a lot mm-hmm. right now as a synonym for God or whatever we, you know, consider our source. What do you think when you use that term?
It's honestly this backdrop.
It is, right?
This is
our floating through the cosmos. But it's more than that, right? It's like
so this
does
to
this
me,
have power over us?
This,
like what do you
this
see?
To me is who we are, right? It's like this interconnected web. And if you get like really, really scientific, so the people that aren't like into the God, the universe, mm-hmm. the woo-woo, whatever, it's like, well, okay, that's okay. But scientifically, like the actual atoms in our body literally come from this.
Yeah, the like whole we're made of star like stuff.
The we're right? made of star stuff, right? Mm-hmm. The carbon in our bones is from the same, from exploding stars. And so it's like, you can take it very, very spiritual and deep and God-esque. Mm-hmm. And it's like truth, scientific truth. Like we are the universe. We aren't separate from the universe. We are literally physically the same thing. It's all this interconnected web. And so I use the word universe for me because it's can be really deep and intuitive in the universe and God and this big grand cosmic intelligence that's mm-hmm. interweaved into our life. And it's like very baseline factual.
It is. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And I use it too, but I think sometimes we forget that mm-hmm. that deeper meaning of it and just yeah. like use it like, oh my God, the universe. Like I remember there was some skit on some, you know, show and they were like, the universe. They were like riding their bikes, you know, and I was like, yeah, it does. It does. It can kind of lose its meaning, but yeah. I love it so much and I use it myself too.
Yeah. So I have this beautiful piece of art in my home in Venice Beach and it's just, it's a picture from, Hubble telescope of like ooh. deep space, very similar to this backdrop.
I love it.
And when I look back, when I, you know, walk around it, I always kind of stop every now and look at it. I'm like, that's actually me. Like that same experience is my body. It's like, I'm part of the universe. I'm literally like, that's where I came from.
Is that why I love these pictures so much? Yeah. I love those pictures. I have a friend who built a telescope in his backyard, like deep telescope. Yeah. He's the smartest person I've ever met. And his pictures mesmerize me. Those mm-hmm. deep space pictures. And I haven't been able to put my finger on why, but maybe that's why.
It's like this deep, like return to home. Like that's
recognition.
Where recognition of that is where this body came from.
That's why, like over the course of human history, we've all been fascinated with it probably.
Yeah. So
like, what is,
and the fact that it's just so beautiful.
It's
you know,
so beautiful.
It's stunning.
Yeah, it's majestically mind-bogglingly beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the word universe to me is, the word universe to me is, that's what it is. It's like this return, it's this connection, it's mm-hmm. spiritual, it's physical, it's mental, it's emotional, and just this reminder that I'm participating in this grand cosmic event that's all interconnected.
Do you wake up every day and say, holy shit, we're alive? Or do you forget sometimes? And then you're like, oh yeah. Cause I forget sometimes.
I forget most of the time.
Okay. Oh good. That makes us all feel better.
Yeah. I forget
most
of the
time. You wrote the book on it and now we're like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
You wrote this a few years ago. So how are you feeling like your evolution has been? You wrote it in 2021, not too long ago. Yeah. Well, 2021 is farther
than I
think. What
it's
the hell?
It's ripping. 2024 already?
I'm like, oh my God, how was 2019 like 5 years
ago? It's that Smash Mouth song, right? The years stop coming and they don't stop coming and they don't stop coming and they don't stop coming.
Tell me about it. Yeah. So how has this spoken to your evolution, I guess I'm wondering, in the last few years? Like, how has it presented in ways that have surprised you?
Yeah, it's crazy how, you know, this book really came out 3 years ago and I've changed so much from this book where it's like, I got to probably do another one.
What's the sequel called?
I don't know. We got to find out.
Remember.
Holy shit, we're still alive.
There you go. Perfect.
We're still here.
Yes.
This book is really kind of the my life growing up and then kind of having these aha moments, and whether you want to call it a spiritual awakening or, you know, really dealing with your internal struggle and dialogue and changing the story. Once you really start diving into like your shadow work for the first time, and this is what this is. And I didn't really get into my shadow work until I was 27, kind of living on autopilot before then. And then once you really start diving into there, you can make really fast progressive changes. And so there's changes are still happening really quick. And you know, it's the constant phrase you hear in personal development, like the work is never completed.
Right.
And so, yeah, it's changed quite a bit, but it's, you know, when you first have that first, you know, awakening or whatever you want to call it, it's really big.
What was yours?
So my first awakening was, well, there's phases to it. And the first phase actually was when I was probably 20. So I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah, grew up Mormon. And when you're like raised in a bubble, you don't know you're raised in a bubble. So grew up in like a white conservative neighborhood area and everyone was white and conservative.
Everyone
and
was
Mormon.
Just like you. Yeah.
That's just what you do. Everyone's Mormon, right?
Yeah.
And so,
was there any diversity like whatsoever? I guess
very,
not.
Very, very, very little.
How wild.
And it was interesting too, because if you had like growing up in like elementary school and junior high and, you know, East Bench of Utah, like if people weren't Mormon, it was like, ooh.
Like, I bet.
Like you're not in, you know?
Yeah.
And so, raised in that kind of situation, everyone's kind of the same and you don't really think much beyond that outside the box. And so the first kind of awakening happened really was what I call like this personal development awakening. And so you kind of just, you know, you grow up, you're told what to do, go to school, go to college, get a good degree, get married super young, have a bunch of babies, buy a house with the white picket fence and just kind of just follow the order. The first kind of awakening was, you know, it's positive, but it's more of like this personal development awakening. And I call it kind of like this going from like phase one of like, not really intense, but there's kind of the victim mentality. Like, this is what you do. Life happens to you. Like the problems out there, whatnot. And then you have like this awakening of like, oh, personal development, like Tony Robbins, like I can get better. It's in this empowerment. I'm in charge. And it's really an empowering phase. And I went through that when I was 20.
I kind of did too, maybe in my 20s. Yeah. I discovered Tony Robbins. Yeah. It was like the 90s, but but the same like trajectory essentially.
You know? Yeah. I remember I got a copy of a book called Goals by Brian Tracy.
I don't know that.
It's a great personal development book. And it's like how to like set goals in your life and go after what you want and go after your dreams and make the money and go for the job. And I remember being like 20 years old in college and being like, this is so exciting and I can get it and I can do what I want. And I got recruited to work at a sales job, which was door to door.
That's still like, we were talking about that last night together and I'm like, Wait, door-to-door exists.
Door-to-door is it's still a big thing. Yeah.
Now someone's going to come to my door. It's just been manifested.
It's so funny because I still have like my door-to-door mindset, and I pulled into this neighborhood last night to come see you guys. And I remember like in my head, I'm like, oh, I would have loved to knock this, you know.
Is that what you say?
I would have loved this neighborhood. I would have knocked this.
So, is that some sales, like door-to-door jargon?
Prime hood.
Oh, a prime. This street is like perfect because it's kind of short and it's like.
So that like those thoughts always pop in. I'm like, oh, I'd have loved this, you know, 15 years ago, prime hood.
Yeah.
And so I got into this sales job when I was 20 that had uncapped commissions.
So that means
you can make as absolute much as you want depending on your production.
Damn.
So I've never had a salary in my life. I've always been on commission or entrepreneur or whatnot. And so when I'm 20 years old, I remember having this like light bulb moment of like, wait, so the only thing stopping my income is me.
Wow.
So
that's pretty profound at 20 because a lot of people don't have that realization until fucking, I don't know, 45.
Right. And so I'm just like, wait, so if I just get better and I learn and I grow and I expand and I increase my skill set, my income is directly correlated to that. You know, I'm 20 years old and I'm reading this book by Brian Tracy and I'm like, oh, I'm the master of the universe. Like my fate, I can do it. I can, if it's up to me.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like an awakening.
That's a big shift at an early age in your view of wealth and what's possible and your own personal development tied to that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like there's just this well of advice on social media about that particularly and shifting your perspective on that. And it's so rare for it to happen early, you know? So many people have to work so hard at
that. Right, right. And
which is what you're teaching people in alchemy too, I think, right?
Totally, like, totally. Yeah. Well, what I didn't see happening at the time was the motivation behind it was really out of alignment.
Oh.
And so what was happening was, so I grew up as a fat kid. So I was overweight as a kid in elementary school and I never felt like I fit in. Yeah. And I didn't belong. And especially, you know, what happens, you get to junior highs when you start getting interested in girls and whatnot. And, you know, none of the cute girls liked me. And it was this belief because I was fat.
You were peaking late.
Yeah. I still haven't hit my prime yet. Amy.
You haven't.
We're still.
I can see it. You're still.
We got plenty of years ahead of us.
That's right.
And so there's a story deeply implanted in my subconscious of like, something's wrong with me. Mm-hmm. I know it. And I know that you know it because you can see it. Mm-hmm. And so I must prove myself of why I belong. And so I have to prove my worth. I have to like go out and hustle and prove my worth to show you why I must be loved and accepted. Right. Obviously I don't have that framework when you're 20, right? Those aren't the words I'm thinking in my head.
No, but that's the subconscious drive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I find this sales job where I can make uncapped commissions. And so subconscious like, wait, if I can go make a bunch of money, then I can show everybody how valuable I am.
Yep.
So because the society rewards wealth.
Yep.
And so I remember seeing this sales job where I could make, you know, really strong money for a 20-year-old. And I'm like, oh, if I go do that, and then I can show people that I have an asset of money and I can give that to you or show you that I can provide, then I must be accepted. Mm-hmm. And so I remember when that dot clicked, I'm like, this is it. Like, this is my way out of being not accepted and not enough and not loved to go and get validation, you know, especially from women.
Yeah.
Right. Like, cause the way I am right now, no girl's gonna pick me. So I must figure out a way to get accepted. And so I, you know, the tools I learned in like elementary school and junior high and high school is like, I'll just be really, really nice, you know, Mr. Mm-hmm. Nice Guy. Mm-hmm. I'll be really kind. I'll be funny. Mm-hmm. Right. I'll be really respectful. Right. And that'll prove that I'm a good guy, but I still need a little bit more. Maybe it's the money piece. So really, you know, in my 20s, 20 to 24, 25, I went and made phenomenal money for a 20-year-old. Mm-hmm. And, with the hopes of like, this is my way out, right? This is the way I can prove my validation. And I'll never forget, like I talk about it in the book. I got into a relationship with this girl, Erin, who's one of my best friends now, but she was like a CrossFit star. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of followers on Instagram and she was really tall and she was beautiful and she has a six pack and She's coveted by a lot of men. And I started dating her. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I have money. And I'm dating this really hot, sexy CrossFit star.
Like a trophy girlfriend.
Yeah, this is it. Like, if she likes me.
Right.
If she likes me, then the world must finally accept me. You know, it wasn't a good match romantically. Like, the reality mm-hmm. was, it just wasn't. And so I was doing crazy things. I was, like, buying her MacBooks and an iPhone and, like, taking her on crazy trips. All from, like, this deep, gross void of, like, just please validate me.
Yeah.
Just please love me. Just please tell me I'm enough. Right? That's all. And, you know, it was this avoidant, anxious trap.
Like clinging.
Clinging.
And, but now, like, what a wonderful experience for you to have had.
Beautiful.
Because it gives you such perspective when people are doing it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, do you look back on that and you're, like, grateful, like, at all?
Yeah, it was, oh, very grateful.
Yeah.
In the moment, so painful.
Totally. Totally. But it's just so such painful. It's just such a shift, like, as we can move past and you're like, oh, and now it makes painful experiences so much, I don't know, easier for me nowadays because mm-hmm. I'm able to go, who knows what purpose this is serving for me mm-hmm. later.
Yeah. And it really, you know, I remember reading when I got into kind of more of the spiritual and I'm like, okay, now I got to a point where I'm like, I actually got to look within.
Yeah.
Right? The problem isn't out there. Problem's inside, right?
The problem, it's me. Uh-huh. Yep.
We love T Swift.
Yes.
And then there was a quote from Dr. Carl Jung that says, until you make the unconscious conscious, it will guide your life and you'll call it fate. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oof, you know, that one
hit. That hits.
That hits. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, what is the unconscious story? And so there's this framework that I teach and that, you know, I call it your kind of your first unconscious memory. So, you know, I look back at my life. I'm like, okay, when was the first time I actually feel like I didn't belong? Like mm-hmm. where did the story originate of like being the fat kid? Mm-hmm. Like, and so I'm like, when was the first time I felt like I was the fat kid? And it was second grade. It was like, and so it's like, it was this, at the beginning, it was this really, really fuzzy memory. And I'm like, well, maybe it's this memory. I can't really tell, but it's like, when's the earliest memory? And I have this really, really vague memory, second grade. And now that I really lean into it, I can remember it. But I was wearing like this brand of basketball shorts to recess. And on the front, of the shorts, it says the size. So like on this little patch, you know,
oh,
so if you're
yeah.
wearing a medium,
I know
it's
what
an
you're
M.
talking about.
If it's large, it's an L. Mm-hmm. So I'm in second grade. I'm wearing a size extra large. Mm-hmm. Right. And I remember there was a fifth grader. So if you're in second grade and someone's in fifth grade, that's like, that's a big gap. Like they're cool. They're the cool kids.
Yeah.
They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They're smart. Right.
Yes.
And there was this like this little scrawny fifth grader and he was wearing a size like medium. Mm. And I'm second grader wearing an extra large and we're at recess and he notices and he calls it out. He's like, you're in second grade and you wear an extra large, you fatty. You must be a fat kid. You know? And
he
I was
said
like,
that? Mm-hmm. Shit.
I met his name was Phil. I remember it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Phil. He didn't know any different.
And that was the first time I'm like, oh, something is wrong with me. Mm-hmm. I don't belong. Like, I don't fit in here. Right. And I remember internalizing that, like, oh my gosh, something's wrong with me, you know? And then the reality was I was overweight as a kid. And so that story literally was driving decisions 20 years later.
Yeah. Right.
You know? And so going back and really evaluating that story and looking at it from a new lens was kind of like a key to kind of getting out of it. Because what, you know, if I look at it from a different perspective, what's reality? This kid was a fifth grader. He was underdeveloped. Mm-hmm. He might be feeling really insecure.
Yeah.
He might be being teased for being scrawny. And so him projecting his stuff out on me mm-hmm. and you, what happens, I realize.
Or he's heard his parents say
yeah.
it. Or who knows, right?
You never know. Mm-mm. And so a lot of times we project kind of our own insecurities onto other people. And then someone might project an insecurity onto you. And then you actually take that on.
Oh my God.
And keep it as your story.
I did in my childhood.
When it's not even your story.
No. Mm-mm. Yeah. I can totally relate. And I think they say it's between 0 and 7 that we will form those.
Yeah.
So you were right. You were 6. Right there.
I was in it.
You were in it.
Yeah. 6, 7. So.
Yeah. And so you take those on.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. so piecing that together, you know, was really, really helpful and healing.
But what, you were in that validation mode with the girlfriend
yeah.
and mm-hmm. everything. What was the catalyst that made you realize there's something here to even work on?
Yeah. I think it was
Maybe there wasn't one thing, but
yeah, there was a lot. And I think what happened was, I call it the success void. And I fell into the success void. I'll never forget. It was a scary moment where I was doing very well at work. And I had, you know, it wasn't like crazy money, like insane private jet money. But, you know, I was in my age group, I was in the 1% of 1%. Like,
sure.
You know, for 24 years old, like, I was in the 1%.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, there was like this big task list at work, like build a team, recruit a team, train, manage, you know, whatnot. And I kind of got to the peak. Like, I was the company sales trainer for a $1 billion company at 24 years old.
That's nuts.
Yeah. And I kind of checked all the boxes that I was supposed to. So if I gave you a resume of my life at 24, like just on paper, you would read it and you'd be like, oh, this dude's got it. He's got the car. He goes on trips. I remember even at that time at 24, I went on a couple of dates with the runner up of Miss USA.
Well, there you go.
So it's like beautiful blonde Miss Oklahoma, right? Mm-hmm. Had the car, was going on trips.
What was the car?
I had a Porsche Cayenne Turbo
S.
Of
course you did.
You know?
Of course you did.
My dream car. Big sports guy, and I was sitting front row at the Super Bowls. Mm-hmm. I remember even I went to a Super Bowl and sat in a private suite with Kevin Durant, you know, like NBA MVP. Mm-hmm. And I remember kind of checking all these boxes, and there wasn't much more room to grow above me on like a accomplishment style other than make more money. So I remember I kind of achieved all these things, and I went to my mentors and my bosses, and I'm like, hey, what should I do next? And they're like, hey, make more money. And I remember thinking, like, I don't know if that's going to be it. And so I remember getting to this peak and being like,
I don't think so. I think some people don't ever get out of that.
Yeah. I'm like,
where? Donald Trump.
Right. You know,
I mean,
it's easy to get stuck in that loop.
I mean, the success void.
Yeah. Success void. And so I remember thinking, there's nowhere else to go. Like, I still feel miserable inside. I still, like, my...
Did you go to bed at night feeling, like, just it, still, like, kind of like...
It was more of, like, I call it happy when syndrome, right? Where we fall into happy when syndrome. I'll be happy when. As soon as I get the girlfriend, I'll be happy. As soon as I get the house or the promotion, then I'll give myself permission to be happy. If I can just get around this corner,
yeah,
then things will be good.
Yeah.
Then I'll be okay.
Totally.
I'll just be okay. Mm-hmm. I was just trying to be okay inside. Mm. It just wasn't okay. Just constant angst and void. And just, it wasn't pleasant to be inside of Doug.
So many people can relate to that,
yeah. Doug. It just wasn't a good experience.
Yeah.
And I remember feeling scared about the time I was 27. When I'm like, a little bit nicer car isn't going to help it. Like a little bit better condo or apartment, it's not going to be any better. Like a nicer trip, you know, isn't going to do it. I kind of went on nice trips and did the first class across overseas and, you know, did the thing. And I'm like, uh-oh.
Is this it? Uh-oh. Kind of thing? Is this what I'm doomed for the rest of my life to feel
yeah.
like?
Yeah, so there was like 1 year, you know, 2016 was really a year of like scared. There was no path. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't really resonated with the Mormon church. I'd left the Mormon church at this point. And so I wouldn't say I had a relationship with God or the universe at all. You know, I'm just like, I don't know if that's not for me. And so it was kind of like no man's land. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, this is it?
It's kind of ironic because like you think you're taking time for yourself, right? Like mm-hmm. that self-care time when you're spending the money on all these things.
Yeah.
But the irony is that you're not taking care of yourself.
Yeah. No.
Isn't that funny?
It's like you're anxiously searching, you know, trying to do these things to find the thing that will like fulfill you.
Yeah. And all like, you need to do is sit still.
You just got to just sit still.
The paradox of it all. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that was a really scary year. And I was just like, I don't know what to do. This is scary, you know, but what was interesting though, was along my journey, you know, I would bump into people every now and then, hotel lobby or at a sports game or on an airplane. And I would run into people and they're just full of life and joy and enthusiasm. And they're like a magnet of love. And I literally remember thinking, like, what do you know that I don't know? Like, I'm doing all the things and you feel really, really happy and fulfilled and joyful and you're pleasant to be around. Like, what do you know that I don't know? Like, what's the secret?
Did you judge them at all and think they're faking it?
No.
No.
No, no, no. There was once, you know, the people that are like very genuine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, they've got it. Like, you can't fake it. Like, if people are faking it, you can tell.
Yeah, you know? I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I would see people that are like really had it. Mm-hmm. And I remember being frustrated. I'm like, what are you doing that I'm not doing? Like, is it your business? Is it like, maybe is it your marriage? I don't know. But I remember being like wrestling with this concept of like, what do you know that I don't know? Like I'm reading the self-help books. I'm doing the Tony Robbins. Like, what is it? And I couldn't figure it out.
What were you trying that wasn't working besides?
It was like, I'd gotten in shape, you know, so I'd get like lost. Uh-huh. So I felt confident in my body. I had the money. I had a good career. You know, my family relationships were amazing. You know, I felt loved and supported by my family. You know, I'm thinking it's like, maybe I need to like, is it a wife? Maybe? Is that what it is? Like, you know,
right.
I need to lock someone down. I don't know. But I just wasn't sure. But I remember just being frustrated. Like, mm-hmm. you're on a day-to-day basis, you seem really, really happy and cool and calm and content. And I was at war with myself. And so it was kind of like, I noticed it within people. And I remember always thinking like, what's the secret? And that's what's kind of drove me to kind of get curious and look at other alternative ways.
So they said more money and you're like, huh.
Mm. I don't think that's it.
Like, I don't think that's what that person in the hotel was doing. I don't think that's what they'd say.
Yeah.
So did you start asking people like what, or did you just dive into some psychedelic work or what was a combo?
So the question that really started it for me was, okay, what type of people seem the happiest?
I like that.
Yeah.
That's a great basic question.
That was kind of like the, you know, I like to do my research and dive into topics.
And what was the answer?
Well, my first, just like on the first thought that kind of came into my head and specifically was like, oh, the hippies.
Damn right.
They're peaceful. I'm such they're a happy hippie. And they're just joyful and they're pleasant to be around and it's nice. And I'm like, all right, the hippies. Like, so maybe I'll start going to yoga.
You do belong in Austin. Yeah. What are you talking about? We're all a bunch of fucking hippies.
Bunch of hippies, yeah.
Okay, so go to yoga. Okay.
So I'm like, okay, yoga, cool. Uh-huh. Meditation. All right. I remember the first time I sat down to meditate. I'll never forget. And I set a timer on my phone for 1 minute.
Perfect. I recommend that to people. Yeah. I'm like, set it for one, set it for two, set it for five. Five is a lot.
1 minute was excruciating. It was excruciating. I'm like, the whole time I'm like, I can't wait to finish this so I can go to lunch. Like, this isn't like, I have to be quiet for 1 minute and just not look at my phone and just sit. Mm-hmm. And it was intense. And you know, and then I did go to a yoga class. My first yoga class ever was transformative because it was a restorative class and they had like, someone play live guitar and the candles. Ooh, nice. And it was really nice, you know.
But not so goal oriented. Yeah, not so next move. What's the next move?
Right, right.
Which is really powerful because I can get competitive in yoga. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was very non-competitive. And I'm like, yeah, I'm very like open to try new things. So I remember going to this yoga class and we get to Shavasana. And I didn't know what Shavasana was. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, now just lay down, you know. And I'm like, I remember after the flow, there was a moment in Shavasana where my mind stopped.
Nice.
And I remember in that moment feeling so calm. And I remember having the thought, I'm like, my mind hasn't felt this calm in 15 years. And that was like, whoa. And so that kicked up my yoga. Like,
you're like, something's working.
Yeah. I'm like Justin, where it's like this, boom, all in. Right.
Yeah.
Like, we're going all in on this thing. So I went and got the yoga mat the next day and the yoga clothes and signed up for a membership. And I started going every day.
I think that's such a valuable personality trait in a lot of ways, because you recognize something and then you do it rather than like, I don't know, is this the right thing? Like an overthinker type. Like,
well, at that point in my life, I've tried all the other things.
Right.
I made millions of dollars and just like, no, that didn't work. So I can go to yoga every day, right?
Yeah.
And so when I started going to yoga, that felt really good. And, you know, and long story short, I share more detail in the book, but that eventually led me to a yoga retreat. I went to a yoga retreat in Costa Rica. and had a moment in another class. It was like sunset yoga, like overlooking the beach, beautiful, under like a new moon. And I had like a somewhat out of body experience.
Cool.
That was, it was the first time feeling detached from my body. And that was like, whoa, what was that?
Yeah.
And that led me to more curiosity. You know, so following the curiosity piece is really important. And like leaning in, like when you're at the edge of the cliff and about to experience something new you've never been to before, like I jump. I lean into the curiosity.
Rather than framing it as fear. Yeah. Or,
I was, you know, it was fear. There was fear, yeah.
It is scary, but at the same time, if you can just, I agree so much. Are you ready to up-level your pleasure practice? I have in mind, and the main things that have helped me are the tools that I've found from Wands. Wands creates luxurious products that encourage us all to honor our body, celebrate our sexuality, and live in pleasure. With more pleasure all the time. One of my favorites, if you listen to this show, then you probably already know, is the cervix wand. Wands has trademarked their number one best-selling glass pleasure wand. It's for vaginal and anal de-armoring, and it's designed for cervical and G-spot stimulation. And let me tell you, it's incredible. It's helped thousands of women become more connected to their bodies and their pleasure, and supports them to heal pelvic pain through self-yoni massage, and helps awaken more pleasure. Just recently, I've ordered the Venus Wand, another trademarked wand from Wands, and it's designed to activate and awaken the G-spot and more. Also, don't miss one of their new offerings, which are free bleed blankets that can be used as waterproof intimacy blankets. They have a beautiful selection now available. But take a look around at wands.com, that's W-A-A-N-D-S, because they have a huge selection of incredible items like yoni eggs, crystal pleasure wands in amethyst, black obsidian, anything that your heart desires, and so much more. Check them out at wands.com. That's W-A-A-N-D-S.com. And use my link in the show notes to get 10% off, or simply enter my code, Amy Edwards, at checkout. Again, that's W-A-A-N-D-S, wands.com. Y'all, I have started using higher dose products, and I am such a fan. You know, I don't put anything on this podcast that I am not 100% completely behind. And I have a special discount code for you for all higher dose products. I'm so excited. If you don't know, Higher Dose is a wellness company. They have wellness tech products, they have tools, they have supplements, and they have body care. They have so many things that are hot right now too, that are really biohacking and up-leveling our lives at home, which is really cool. They have an infrared sauna blanket. They have an infrared PEMF mat that I'm so excited to be sharing about soon. One of my favorites though is the red light face mask. It stimulates collagen, it activates glowing skin, reduces fine lines, regenerates cells. And it's soft. It's not like one of the hard plastic ones. So you can kind of move it around on your body, which I've been doing. And I am seeing amazing results. I am absolutely addicted to it. I use it every single night. And I'm using it in conjunction with one of their other products, the Glow Serum. And I'm very picky about what I put on my skin. And I am loving the Glow Serum. It's specially formulated to plump and hydrate and stimulate radiant skin, which that's the goal. They have a ton of other products too, magnesium ingestibles, magnesium body care, which has a healing oil and a serotonin soap that you can use in your bath, which I've been using too. It boosts your mood, enhances your skin, and deepens your detox, gets you calmed down. Anyway, I'm a fan, so I'm so excited to offer you 15% off using my code MAGIC15. Go to the show notes. You can click through on the link right there, or if you go to Higher Dose, just enter the code MAGIC15 and you'll get 15% off. Higher Dose has been featured in Goop, Glamour, Elle, Vogue, Bazaar, Allure, basically you name it. And there's a reason why. So go check it out. It's at higherdose.com and enter my code MAGIC15 for 15% off.
Did you know that according to a study, 87% of women who have hair extensions lie about having them? And almost 2/3 of women have done some kind of hair extension at some point. So if you do the math, it's a lot. This show is all about letting go of judgments. So if you don't want to tell, I'm not going to judge you. And if you want to know the best secret for hair extensions anywhere around, it's right here in Austin, Texas at The Collective ATX. They have the most natural, lightweight, comfortable hair on the market, and they specialize in no damage to your natural hair like traditional hair extension methods, which I've tried. I've tried them all. And I didn't even know that your hair is automatically damaged if the extensions are placed anywhere below your ears. Crazy, right? My hair is actually growing in and getting healthier now too. Plus, they keep all their extensions in-house, meaning that you don't have to wait at all. Not to mention color. I'm so picky, I did it myself for years because no one can get it right until now. They were named a top 200 salon by Salon Today in 2023. They've changed my hair journey. Let them change yours. The Collective ATX. Link is in the show notes. Tell them I sent you.
So I had that experience in Costa Rica, and at the same time, read a book called Stealing Fire, Jamie Whale, little Boston guy. And that book was the first book that really, you know, growing up in Utah, being Mormon, psychedelics are like, every psychedelic is meth, and if you do it one time, you'll be addicted, and then you'll be homeless, and then you're going to die.
Totally.
Like, that's the one big blanket on everything, right?
That seems like a pretty, you know, big thing to break through with that deep religious upbringing.
Especially in, you know, in my community and demographic, it was like, no, right? Yeah. That's very bad.
That's changed a lot, though, in the last 10 years, hasn't it?
It's changed a lot last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first book that opened up my mind of like, oh, there's actually some substance here and like some really powerful research behind all of this. And it seems like there's a lot of benefits. So really, really long story short, had my first psychedelic experience, you know, maybe a couple months later.
Which was what?
So it's the most unexplainable thing that's ever happened in my whole life. To this day, still doesn't make any sense.
Ooh, I love that.
I took MDMA at a house party.
Okay.
And I had a DMT-like experience.
Maybe you're just sensitive.
I think I was just ready.
Your brain was like, we're releasing these chemicals and here we go.
And it's crazy. I've done MDMA multiple times since that first experience. Nothing even remotely close to that first time.
Wild.
It doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But took the MDMA at a house party, went to another dimension. I don't know how else to say it. Mm-hmm. Different dimension. Very unexplainable. Things I saw that there aren't words for.
Wow.
But it really opened up my mind to the concept of like, there is a creator. It was my first real experience with God. Nice. Like, oh, there is an intelligence beyond comprehension that is very involved in the inner workings of the whole experience. Mm-hmm. And that experience was so profound. Still to this day, the most important experience of my entire life.
Was that the first time you'd done like a drug like that? Anything other than
being some like a little maybe? Stoner, right? Yeah. In high mm-hmm. school, right? You smoke a little weed and whatever, and you just giggle, whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was my first experience of like truly expanding consciousness.
Nice.
And it was so beautiful and so intense, and it really shattered my like constructs of reality. Because I was like, that was the most real thing that ever happened. It was more real than this is real.
Really?
Like I went, it wasn't, which was crazy is, you know, I've done a lot of plant medicine now, why not? And you hallucinate and you have these kind of these really powerful visions. This experience was literally, I went, you know, I mean, I'm careful with my words here. And this is my experience. I'm not saying this is true, but like the way I experienced it was I went to a dimension on top of this dimension, but I was like, me and you were still here, but mm-hmm. I was like in through the veil or the spirit world or 5D or whatever. And I was actually in the other dimension and it was insane. Like I can't even explain it. It's so beautiful and beyond anything I could ever comprehendly, you know, articulate to you.
Yeah.
And it's just more real. And I'm like, that was the most real thing. And I was able to see connection and my mind was expanded and I, you know, was inside. It just felt like I was just getting downloads, like the matrix, like the code was just mm-hmm. coming into my head. And just showed me just my timeline got bigger and I saw just this whole expansion. And how I perceived it was I saw like the whole inner workings of being human, like what we were before and what happens when we die and the whole purpose of this whole experience. So I really, you know, keep in mind, I was like this Utah Mormon sales bro. And I was seeing how I'm a soul. I'm an actual infinite energetic ball of infinite light. Mm-hmm. And I get transported into this body. And then I have all of these experiences. And then at the end, I like return to like what's called like a general's tent. And there's like this review of my experience. And then I can go back and continue. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, oh, multiple lives. At the time, like you hear like reincarnation. Mm-hmm. And I always thought that meant like, oh, hippies think that when you die, you'll be a flower. Cool. Sure. That's what I thought that it was. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, oh, multiple lives make sense. And like there's accountability and you have resources on the other side and people are helping you and there's synchronicities and intuition. And I'll never forget too, in that moment, I was at like a cabin house party and having this experience. And I remember going out onto this, the deck at the house party. And I remember seeing the lake that was, you know, up in the mountains, beautiful lake. And I remember seeing the earth soul breathing.
Nice.
And I'm like, oh, Mother Earth. Oh, I get it. It's like an actual entity, like a real living entity. You know, being this very like sales guy, it's just like,
I'm
Mother Earth,
whatever. With how well you remember this and are able to articulate it.
It was the most important thing that ever happened in my whole life.
I love it.
Yeah, you can't forget that. Like,
no.
And yet there's so much to it that I would never be able to explain.
Well, I feel like I've had those psychedelic experiences. Yeah. And when you said the breathing of the earth and stuff, I've experienced that. And, but I guess I'm just, maybe my memory's not as good. I don't know.
Yeah. No, it was, I can still see, like I close my eyes, I can go there almost.
Do you feel like before that you still held on to some religion teachings that might have, I don't know, unconsciously impacted you and then you were able to let go of those? Like I'm thinking of like a belief in hell or something like that.
The best way to describe it, especially growing up Mormon, is my vantage point changed. So the old vantage point was I'm this, you know, imperfect person and I'm like praying up to, you know, Mormon God. Mm-hmm. And Mormon God's in charge and he's on his throne and he's got his cane and it's like, I want to please Mormon God. Like, you know, it's this grand thing above it.
Being judged,
mm-hmm. right? And the perspective changed where it was almost like I went above that and flipped and looked down. And so I saw how like, you know, any religion, right? Mormonism or whatever it may be, it's part of the whole thing. So I'm like, oh, Mormonism is a piece of the pie mm-hmm. next to, you know, you were raised, what was it?
Methodist,
whenever it may be, or you know, Judaism or Catholicism mm-hmm. or Islam, whatever it may be. And like, it's just all there. And it's not right or wrong or good or bad or whatever. It's just part of the experience. And so having that vantage point shift mm-hmm. where it flips, that's what happened. So it wasn't like, it just completely changed like the neuro wiring in my brain.
Nice.
So it wasn't like, I have like no qualms against the Mormon church. I think it's great if you're in it, whatever your thing is, no big deal. Where before it was like this grand, big cosmic mm-hmm. thing. And you know, I'm going to put my throne down, you know, and just having that experience change where it was just like, you know, completely changed my perception of it completely.
Well, so if someone believes in the heaven and hell concept and the judgmental God and stuff, how do you view that now then?
I would say, you know, everyone's on their journey and exactly their own time. And sure. I support whatever people want to believe in. You know, I'm not here to change, not get people to leave Mormonism or whatever. It's just, I think the true intention with having a religious belief is people want to have a connection with their God and feel like loved and supported and need guidance and whatever that is for you, then that's great. And I don't think people are right or wrong for doing it, you know. And maybe I always say this, I always tell my Mormon friends this, I'm like, hey, maybe Mormonism is true. I'll find out at the end and I might go to Mormon hell. Who knows? Maybe. I don't know.
No way.
I don't know. Could, but it's not something I wrestle with.
That's interesting. Yeah. That's really good.
And I wrestle with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think because that experience was so indescribably insane, mm-hmm. my takeaway from it was my human mind, the brain that's in Doug's body right now, is so insignificant. Like it doesn't have the capacity to understand. So the analogy I use in the book, right? You have a very sweet puppy, Tipsy. She's an angel.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. if you committed the rest of your life, like you were in, I'm committed, I'm going to make it happen to explain global economics to Tipsy.
Right.
Would you ever get your point across?
No.
No. But Tipsy lives in a world where global economics actually affects her.
Mm-hmm.
Right. She lives in a world where global economics. So if the economy goes really, really, really bad, Tipsy might not be able to eat as well.
Right.
And she might have to move to a house that's smaller and it's going to affect her living conditions. So she's a part of a global economy that can definitely affect her, but she'll never understand it.
Mm-mm.
She doesn't have the capacity to understand it.
Yes.
Right. So that difference in gap and brain capacity, I think, is times a million between me and God.
Yeah.
So for me to even think, but I'm experiencing, I'm on life, that's part of my day to day. I don't think I ever in a million years could even slightly understand the true nature of it.
Right. It's almost kind of arrogant to think you could. I love that analogy.
Yeah.
Great. Well said. And I felt like that after I finished college. I think that I studied philosophy and religion, as I told you. And I think that I just kind of got like, we're not going to figure it out. Yeah. Like, we don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it is a stack of turtles or, you know, I don't know. Like all these are an evil genius. I don't know. Right. There's all these different theories. We could come up with theories all day long.
Yeah.
And I think it's just when people think that they've got it all figured out, that's the part that makes me go like, I mean, maybe, but thinking that you've got it figured out is really like, come on.
Yeah. So when people have like these, you know, what do you think's happens? What, you know, it's fun to chat about.
It is,
but
right.
The final phrase is, doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter because we don't know and we aren't going to know.
We can't. And I don't think we ever can know because we don't have
because we're tipsy.
We don't have the capacity to know. So it doesn't matter. But what I do think matters is this, you know, so having like gone Mormon and then way, you know, I've gone really woo woo and like I'm confident in my belief there. There's two things that I think matter.
Okay.
And this is what this is how I define spirituality for me.
Great.
Right. Two things. Am I a force for good? Am I actually doing good for myself, for the world, and for others? And then number two, it's beautiful for me, is am I pleasant to be around? That's what I focus on a day-to-day basis. Am I doing good? Am I force for good? Am I serving life and serving others? And am I is it nice to be around me? Do you like people enjoy being in my presence?
Yeah.
And if I can just be a force for good and be pleasant to be around, I think that's like really simple and really, really beautiful way to live.
Do you think that being pleasant to be around, you have to just, I think foundationally you have to enjoy being with yourself, like,
totally.
And then that, you know, you are, I mean, still some people can be annoyed, but that's their own issue.
Sure.
But I do think that like the people pleaser in me, you know, has a little twinge of like, oh gosh, that can be a bit of a slippery slope for me because I have a deep ingrained people pleaser. So I have to recognize that and think like, okay, don't get too caught up in being pleasant to be around that you compromise yourself. So I have to like really tune into just being happy with myself. And then I'm like, yeah, okay, that feels good.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point there, Amy. Like you have to be able to love being with yourself before you can actually truly love being with others.
When did you feel like you crossed over into loving being with yourself after all that you'd been through and you were still like, I feel.
Yeah.
Like, was it gradual? Or for me, I think it was self-love mirror work that, I mean, it was a lot of things that I was doing, but that forced me to really start to love myself. But did you have a special practice that really leaps to mind, or was it just more of a progression?
Yeah, I think it's a progression too. There isn't like a defining moment, but you know, it's really getting into the personal development, you know, getting really into therapy was helpful.
Do you still go to therapy?
I do go to therapy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Therapy's important for me. And you know, my therapy sessions now are really kind of like check-ins and just fine tuning things.
Mm-hmm. It's been great for me off and on over the years.
Yeah. And then there's times where something gets triggered and you got to go a little deeper. And, but yeah, learning to love, you know, so I work with a lot of clients I have a lot of coaching clients, and a common advice that I continue to give them, having learned this myself, is you have to learn to love being alone. And I was like, I tell my male clients, I call it master dating.
What's that?
Where you date yourself.
Yes.
Yeah, you master, take yourself on dates.
Oh, master dating. That's cute.
Yeah, master dating, right? So like, go to movies by yourself, go to shows, go play golf by yourself, like go pick up a book and stay home one night and just read a book and just like enjoy being in your own company.
Truly.
And I probably spent 2-3 years on that, really focusing on that. And I think that's a really way to start loving yourself is like, what am I genuinely curious about?
Mm-hmm.
Is it, if I always wanted to get into cooking, if I would want to start skiing, I would want to start playing golf. Like another thing that I did this year that I picked up that's very nostalgic is because I'm like, hey, I like this for me and it's just for me and no one else, is when I was a kid, I collected sports cards.
Oh.
Yeah. So yeah. Like NBA, I'm a big sports guy. I love the NBA and college football and whatnot. And I would collect all the cards when I was like in junior high and I had
a
big
book. Did you save them all?
I've got them all.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, nice.
I've got some good ones.
Good.
And so this year, I'm like, I remember seeing some Instagram reels of like people showing their sports cards. I'm like, I'm going to get back into sports cards.
Mm-hmm.
So a couple times last year, like cleared my schedule, drove down to the card shop in LA,
how
made
fun.
It a whole day, listened to my favorite music, bought a pack of cards, got really, really giddy, you know, got like some good ones in the sleeve. I put them up on my wall. And I'm like, that's just for me. That's my thing. This is mine.
It's your personal thing to nerd out on.
I'm just going to be a little nerd for a little bit. And I still collect college football cards now. And I got some fun ones. And I'm like checking the prices and doing some trades. And it's just for me.
Just for you.
It's just for me. So I think everyone needs to have a thing that's just for them.
Mm-hmm.
It's not with you and your partner. It's not with you and your family members. It's not with you and your friends. It's just for you. And for me right now, that's collecting sports cards.
That's
just
cool. I'm sitting here thinking like what mine is. I'm not sure. I'll have to think about it. Yeah. I'm sure I've got something. But yeah. But I think that's great advice too, when we tap into those things. Not only they say like do those things that you loved when you were young, mm-hmm. you know, and that really bring you joy, but then also just to take the time for ourselves, because mm-hmm. I mean, if you'd done that in your 20s, you know, you probably would have just sought out the most expensive card,
right,
to tell others about.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You're probably one of like 3 or 4 people I've told about my sports cards.
I can't wait. I want to know more, and I'll have to find one of Justin's for you.
We got to find a Justin card.
We have some like floating around somewhere. Yeah. I'm going to try to find one for you for sure.
Cool. I would love that.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you come back to Austin, I'll have that for you.
Yeah. So I think, you know, that a piece of advice is like, what's something you've always wanted to do that you would love to do that you could add into your calendar for 30 minutes earlier this week?
Right.
You know?
And there's just such that can like unleash some things that maybe you might need to unpack, because mm-hmm. then you get into like, I'm too old for that, or stories that we've mm-hmm. adopted that limit us. Mm-hmm. And at least I hear a lot of people say that, oh, I'd love to do X, you know, but I'm too old. And I'm like, I literally didn't pick up a guitar till I was 39.
Yeah, we're not getting any younger.
We're not getting any younger. Yeah. And how much time do you really have left? And like, I mean, like, why not enjoy it? That's part of the holy shit we're alive. It's like, just enjoy this moment.
So I got I remember I did a ceremony, and I quote my book. I got this like really strong download one night. And I think this is why it's so important to do things like this, because when we do things that make us feel alive,
mm-hmm.
that spark joy and enthusiasm and excitement, it kind of opens up our energetic channel, right? And we can kind of like get our finger into the intuition information layer. And when we do things that make us feel alive, we're open to inspiration. We're open to new insights. We're open to new ideas, right? And those new ideas are going to shift and change who we are and change our lives and really spark a difference in what we're trying to do. If we're really closed-minded, I'm too old to do this and I need to do my work and I got to hustle and I got to grind and I got to do this, the energy behind that is a little bit more tense and tight and closed, and it's like a box.
Mm-hmm.
And like the inspiration can't come in.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I think it's actually necessary and a necessity to do kind of these new experiences, because it opens us up to creativity and insights, and that's where we can get really clear ideas. And I know like there's a lot of like famous musicians who talk about how all of their songs come when they're mountain biking or skiing or painting. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, it's direct correlation to that of like, if we do things that open up our creative talents, we actually get insights and ideas for our work or for our family or for our relationships.
That's really well said, what you said about the energy and doing mm-hmm. the new things is about the energy, because it's funny, you probably picked up on my energy because I was thinking about my own musical journey. Mm-hmm. And as a music artist, looking back, it wasn't so much about the songs I created or about getting on stage and pushing myself out of my comfort zone. It was more about opening myself up in these mm-hmm. energetic ways and the personal payoff of that.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Like, and who I became over the years. Because I don't do that so much anymore, but I don't need it as much. And I think that I think that so many times I've talked about like, oh, you know, get outside your comfort zone, but it's more about that energy that you're opening yourself up to.
Yeah.
Really beautifully said.
Thank you.
Yeah. I resonate a lot with that.
Yeah. And I think that's why, you know, it's so important, like, to get out into nature, mm-hmm. right? To go mm-hmm. get into these flow states they talk about, right? Whether it's music or art.
I kind of go back and forth with that.
Yeah.
Like, yes, uh-huh. but I don't know if you've read Stephen Pressfield.
Love Pressfield.
Yeah. The War of Art, you know, it's about that routine and it's mm-hmm. about showing up every single day mm-hmm. and really, really tapping in that way. So I think there's both, you know, that flow and that, I don't know, Jamie Wheel-esque vision of it, like getting out in nature and having those ideas and new experiences. But there's also that showing up every day. So
yeah, you got to do the work.
I kind of do both.
You got to do the work.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. So a mindset shift is, there's this old way of thinking, which is do, have, be, is kind of what society teaches. It's like, if you do the work, you do the hustle, you do the grind, you do the push-ups, you do the writing, mm-hmm. then you'll have the house or the partner or the car, or the status or the book or the recognition. And if you finally have those things, then you will be happy,
done with the journey
and like made it,
able to check the box,
yeah. accomplished, excited, I've made it, right?
Fill in the blank.
I'll feel really good, mm-hmm. right? So the shift is taking that be from the end and just move it to the front.
Yeah.
Be happy, be fulfilled, be engaged, be optimistic, be enthusiastic, be open. But then the next piece is, you still got to do the work.
Yeah.
The doing doesn't go away. But if you do the work, do the hustle, do the grind from the state of being, then you can have whatever you want.
Yeah. What still comes up for you? What stories do you still grapple with a little bit that come up? And then what's your process for overcoming those?
Yeah. The story that comes up the most, you know, it's always goes back to just, I'm not enough. I don't belong. I don't fit in. I'm different. Right. You know, and it's interesting because I battle this where it's when I'm like in Austin, I'm like, I'm not spiritual enough for Austin. Like, I'm not woo-woo enough for this community here.
Oh my God, you so are.
Yeah.
Trust me.
You know, and so that's what I battle with. Right.
Right.
And then when I'm in like Utah and my old communities, it's like, I'm not bro-y enough for them. Like, I'm too spiritual. I'm too woo-woo for this group. So I don't quite fit in here. Mm-hmm. I'm not enough for this group. And I'm not enough. I'm not enough for the Utah group. I'm not enough for the LA group. I'm not enough for the Austin group, because I'm just not fully in, you know. And so that's the story that keeps coming up for me.
And so what is your... You know, what do you do about that?
Yeah. So when I do feel off-centered, you know, for me, it's always kind of just getting kind of grounding, right? So I love that you guys had a cold plunge, right? I like mm-hmm. to change my change. So here's actually the formula. I can share the formula with you.
Please do.
And I'm stealing this from Tony, right? But he calls it state, story, strategy. So if you want to find success, whether it may be, whether you're accepted, you're loved, whatever it may be, you want to find success, or maybe it's financial success, right? There's three inputs. There's the state of being that you're in, like your physiological state. Mm-hmm. Are you joyful, excited, optimistic, pumped up? Plus the story you're telling yourself. I'm not enough. I don't fit in. I don't belong. Plus your strategy, which is the actual implementation of execution. Mm-hmm. And what happens is we're in a negative state. right? If we're in a negative state and we're telling ourselves a negative story, what we do is we tend to focus all of our effort on, okay, what's the strategy to change this? What do I got to say? What do I got to do? Who do I need to connect with? But if you're in the wrong state, you're gonna have the wrong story. The strategy is not gonna matter. So what he shares that I share with a lot of my clients is, rather than trying to change the strategy, you have to focus all of your energy and effort on changing your state first. So he talks about state plus story plus strategy, the way those are weighted. 80% of success is state. 15% is the story and only 5% is the strategy. So if I'm feeling like I don't belong, I don't fit in, I don't quite fit into this group here, right? Rather than changing the strategy, like what do I need to do? What do I need to say? Who do I need to be? First thing I need to do is go change my state. So I need to go get into a happy, optimistic, enthusiastic, engaged state of being. So, and I might need to go do a workout, do a meditation, go do a cold plunge, do some push-ups.
Dance.
Yeah, do some dance, you know, dance it out, right? Yeah. Go get in nature, go get into a, you know, deep, deep gratitude practice, right? Do some self-love, maybe some journaling, change my state, which will automatically change the story. And then the strategy will just come.
Then it's all flowing.
Then we're flowing.
Yeah. I've always, I back when I studied Tony years ago, I remember that stuck with me, that state change. I mean, he forces people to do that.
Does.
Yeah. And it's very powerful. And I forget that sometimes. I literally, my state change can be taking a shower.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh yeah. You know,
it's gotta just like, move it around a little bit.
Oh my God. Wash your energy. Who do you, you know, like just, it can be so simple and we make it so much more complicated and can wallow. And then suddenly you're like, oh my God, my story just changed just like that.
Yeah. And what causes the biggest state change for you? Like, what are things you do where it like really just zaps you into peak state?
Golly. I mean, I do really simple things like go for a walk, you know, put down my phone, I mean, that one, I'll catch myself and I start saying negative things to myself as I'm scrolling. And then I'm like, ooh, I'm doing that, you know, turn it off and set it down. That's like 101, like that's so small, but really like a shower is a huge one for me because like I can just be like, oh my God, I'll suddenly realize like I haven't really like showered, washed my hair, done the whole thing in like a couple of days and I'm slogging around. I've been working out, you know, even if you cold plunge or something like that, still you can be like, I need to wash my energy or something. So that's a good one for me. And I'm like, I forgot again. Here we are.
We got to get up and dance.
And dancing, I think, is a great one. Like, and that one, turning on music. Like, so it doesn't even have, you don't have to have special equipment or anything. Like, turn on some music, dance. Because I'll get caught up in podcasts and listening to Audible or whatever.
Right.
And I have to sometimes force myself. No, if I listen to something that really uplifts me, I think it makes a difference. What is one of your favorite, most mind-blowing things to think about? Because here you are, holy shit, we're alive. Like, what constantly blows your mind? You have to think about that for a second.
There's a lot of things that constantly blow my mind. I mean, just the fact that we have no idea what's happening in the universe. We really don't.
We really don't.
We have no clue, you know. And, you know, with the new James Webb telescope, is really exciting because we're going to get some new imagery, but there's like 2 trillion galaxies, 2 trillion galaxies.
Number 2 throws me off there. Cause then I think like I might be able to process that number. So 2 trillion, that means like nothing to me.
So on average there's, you know 100 billion stars per galaxy. I mean, there's 2 trillion of them, you know, and
I don't know what that number is.
We don't. It literally blows your mind, right? And just the entire cosmic scope, how grand this experience is, and the fact that we haven't discovered anything even remotely close to planet Earth, and we got Earth. Like the experience that me and you are having.
Right.
We got Earth. And out of all the planets we've discovered, there's nothing going on out there. I think I'm scientifically proven there's more, you know, it's almost impossible that there isn't some sort of conscious life out there.
Absolutely.
Makes sense.
Yes.
Statistically, just math wise, it makes sense. And given the vastness of the universe, that we got a planet where this is happening. There's beaches and mountain ranges and animals and people and food and experiences. And we have this incredible mind where we can create things and build things and express ourselves and the internet and
totally
all these things. And it's just like, this whole thing is insane. Like, it's insane.
And really, when they say 2 trillion galaxies, they're kind of guessing.
Yeah.
They don't, that, there could be.
That might be in
a lot more.
That might be just in one universe of infinite universes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We watched the other day, we watched, have you seen Bill? Do you like Bill and Ted? Have you watched any
Bill and Ted? I haven't seen Bill and Ted.
Okay.
It's past my generation.
Well, yes, it is. So Justin watched it for the first time the other day. Yeah. It's my generation. And yeah. I'm a huge Bill. I love anything time travel, like anything. Yeah. But in the most recent Bill and Ted, which, don't watch the second one, by the way. Just watch the first one, and then just watch the third one, everybody, okay, if you're tuning in. So, Bill and Ted Face the Music was a few years ago, but it is like about these other universes where there's other versions of us going on, and like, and just processing that. It's just so fun to think about. Like, there could be another Earth where Doug's doing other things. Maybe he didn't have that experience when he was in second grade, and he's a totally different person, but he's you. You know, it's, anyway, whatever. I just got sidetracked. But yes, here we are.
Yeah, it's great.
No, I think here we are. I don't know. Maybe I'm dreaming the whole thing, but.
Could be.
Absolutely could be.
And it's so cliche, right? But it's just like, be in the now, be present, right? But it's like, it's real. Like, be present in the moment, and this is it, and this is, we're doing it right now. Like, this is life. Life isn't going to start when you get the promotion or get married or whatever. Like, that, we're doing it right now.
We're doing it right now.
Right now. This is most real life is going to get.
I just felt that in my heart.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go ahead as a 30-year resident of Austin, Texas, who grew up in the proximity even before that. I'm going to go ahead and say you're a hippie.
I'm a hippie.
Go ahead and say it.
Give it to me.
You're keeping it weird.
Keeping
man.
It weird. You gotta keep it weird.
That's right. That's all you have to do. Like, care. Actually, you don't even have to do that. We don't care anymore.
It doesn't even matter.
But I mean, you got a lot of hippie in you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes.
It's a compliment now.
Fuck yeah. Yeah. In my book? 100%. Someone said it to me in my 20s or something, because I said something about someone accepting me, someone older or something. And she was like, well, you're just kind of a hippie. And I was like, oh my God, I am.
Oh, shoot. Here we are. We made it.
We made it. Yeah. How do you, I don't know, how do you navigate your evolution and your presence? Like, when you think about what's to come and everything, is it just a flow and surrender? I mean, I know you're a big fan of Michael Singer, too.
Love Michael Singer.
Me, too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the Untethered goat. Soul, if nobody's listened to that, read it, whatever, that's your basic.
You know, it's hard. It's really, really hard to comprehend that, because if I look back at 5 years ago and then I look back at 10 years ago, it's exponential change, right? And what we tend to do as humans is we tend to think, okay, 5 years from now, I'll probably be doing something kind of similar or whatnot. And I probably won't change that much. But if I'm changing at the rate I've changed in the last 5 years, if I continue on that trajectory, I'm going to be living in a universe I can't even comprehend. Like, it's going to be so different than I could imagine. If you'd asked me in 2019, what is my life going to look like in 2024? I could have spent 2 weeks trying to map it out in game plan. And COVID wasn't on the wasn't on the list, right? Like, I wouldn't have gotten that one. And it changed crazy. And then my life has changed dramatically, and my insights and my viewpoints on life have changed so much, even since this book came out. And so
I thought you were about to say, even since we started this podcast.
Even since we started this podcast, everything's changed. The last 40 minutes, it's changed. No, but it's changing so quickly that if I'm staying at that rate of change, and most likely most people are going to continuously change.
Right.
That I can't even predict.
So what does that look like for goal setting? Do you, like, you liked that book,
I do,
Goals.
I do
so,
set goals.
Well, so, okay, let's talk about goal setting for a second, because I think that a lot of people, like, they have to evolve a bit, right? Mm-hmm. So what does goal setting look like for you now versus, like, before?
Yeah. So goals, so my phrase with goals is this: big goals held loosely.
Love that.
So I have a really big goal that's going to get me moving in the right direction. Mm-hmm. It's going to get me on the path. I'm moving north, right? But what happens when I start moving north and I start getting up the mountain a little bit, I start to see new perspective. I start to see new paths. I start to see different angles. I start to see different situations. And when I have gather more information, that might change the direction I'm moving. And so I always say do big goals held loosely. So get moving. You have to do the work. You know, it's the Rumi quote. Once you start walking, the path will appear. Mm-hmm. And it's always kind of evolving. So I do a daily goal setting thing.
Daily,
cool. I do a daily. It's called the top 10.
Oh.
Right. So it's the top 10. What are the top 10 aspirations in my life right now? You know, financial, physical, mental, emotional, mm-hmm. relationships, whatever I want to do. And it evolves.
Did you already do it today?
I haven't done it yet. Yeah, but it's coming up.
But you make time for it every day.
Every day. Every single day. Mm-hmm. Right. And it's really cool to look back 2-3 years ago and seeing how you've accomplished some and some have changed and some have adjusted. And there's goals I had maybe 3 years ago that don't resonate anymore. But it's all about just walk. Because the reality is like there is no finish line. Mm-hmm. Like no one's won life. No one's been declared the winner of life. And so knowing that this is an eternal game, like there's no finish line. It's just, I want it to keep moving and growing and expanding. And my mind and my opinions change all the time.
What would a goal look like though for you? Would it look like, let's see, to be in service to the world? Or would it be to start a nonprofit that's going to help a specific type of person? You know, like,
so I'll share, there's two parts to it. Mm-hmm. So I do a top 10, which is very like tangible, right? My net worth is X amount when I'm 50 years old.
Oh, okay.
Right? My business generates X revenue by this date. Mm-hmm. My business has this many clients by this date, right?
Those are very specific. Really specific.
Very specific, right? I own homes here at this date, mm-hmm. right? I'm in partnership with this type of person, you know, these things. I'm a dad. All these things, right? So more tangible, my body fat percentage and health and my mental health stuff. So that's kind of the first part, is like tangible. It's like their I am statements. I am doing this by this date.
Interesting.
Right. The next piece, this is one of the most impactful things I do, is next sheet of paper, I write at the top, who is Doug Cartwright? Mm-hmm. And then I fill in the attributes and characteristic traits I'm trying to possess. So that's more of like the first two that come out every time. I am a force for good. I am joyful and pleasant to be around. Mm-hmm. I am in full service to life. Mm-hmm. I'm kind. I'm considerate. I'm masculine. I'm strong. I'm steady. I'm financially unbreakable. I'm a good friend. I'm a good listener. I'm a loyal member of my family. I'm adventurous. I'm industrious. I'm a learner. I'm a student. I'm engaged. I'm healthy. I'm an early riser.
You got those on lock.
Yeah, we just rub them. We just rub them out every day. Right. Yeah. And so I'll do 30, 40 of them.
Every single day?
Yeah. Impressive. And so I embody these traits. And so when I go out into the world, right, I can show up as that way, right? And embody the identity of it first.
Do you ever miss a day?
Every now and then, yeah, definitely.
Can you feel it when you do?
Not as much anymore because it's rare.
We kind of just did it right now.
Yeah, we kind of just did it right now. But writing it down, I do pen and paper. I have a remarkable. So I don't type them. I write it. Hand and paper helps for me. Mm-hmm. And
you have a remarkable
one? Oh yeah, it's amazing. It's like a digital pen and paper.
Oh,
it's like an iPad, but it feels like you're writing and it logs all of your stuff. You can categorize and put them in folders. And
I've never even heard of that.
Oh, you'd love it.
I probably would
love it.
Nice.
I use it every day.
Oh, that's cool. And so can you flip through it to see,
and you can stuff? And you can search for stuff. And
oh, nice.
It's great. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Technology.
Yeah.
Blows my mind.
Blows my fucking totally blows my mind. Sometimes I'm like, how in the what is happening?
Yeah.
what other daily, like, non-negotiable everything do you have? I want your habits.
There was a lot. It's gonna sound crazy, but we talked about it this morning.
To me.
The foundation of all of it is sleep.
Fuck yeah, it is.
Yeah. Because when you're tired, what's the only thing you think about?
Besides food.
Is how sleepy you are.
How tired I am.
Yeah. When you're sleep deprived, the only thing you think about is how tired you are.
Yeah.
It affects your relationships. Mm-hmm. It affects your intuition. It affects your creativity.
Your performance. It affects whatever.
It affects the way you eat.
It affects my mental dialogue.
Yeah.
Big time.
Yeah. So the keystone habit for me is sleep. Mm-hmm. Right. If I sleep well, if I'm well rested, every other area of my life increases, improves.
I had a life coach way back when, like 2007. And he gave me a questionnaire to fill out when we started working together. And he, one of the questions was, what's the one thing that I could say to you when you're really feeling down? And I was like, have you gotten enough sleep? And I was like, well, even just writing that down, I was like, I had that realization, like, for sure, for real. Like, and it's so kind of, that's cliche, right? Yeah. Like, are you tired? But it's so true.
Yeah.
Okay. So sleep. So what do? You go to bed early? Do you have a set time, set wake up? You travel a lot.
I do travel a lot. But when I'm in my rhythm, like full on rhythm, when I'm not traveling as much, I go to bed really early.
What's really early?
8:30.
That's pretty early.
Pretty early. 8:39.
I'm impressed. And then you get up when?
Well, sometimes like when I'm really tired, don't tell anyone. Well, everyone's going to know.
Okay. I won't tell anyone.
But like in the summertime, sometimes it's like 7:45.
Nice.
Yeah. It's great.
You're like, that's it. That's it. I'm out. Yeah. And then when you get up?
In the summer, I get up around 4:30.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll get on streak where I'll get into the fourth. And then I kind of push it to 4 one time and I'm like, this is too much.
I am encountering more and more people that get up at like 4 something.
Yeah. It's magic.
Well, I get up at 5:17.
Well,
that's enough for me.
That's great.
Because I don't go to bed as early as you do.
Yeah. So some people's brain, like 10. Now people are like, oh, I'm a night owl. My brain activates at night. Now, as soon as the sun goes down, it's game over for me.
I think that, yes, but it's almost a matter of training.
Yeah. You know? Definitely have to work up to it.
Well, even just like, oh, my brain activates and stuff. I mean, you can shift that around. You're not a slave to what you think your brain does. I don't know. That's just me. Maybe I don't know, different strokes, but I think it's adaptable.
I think it's adaptable.
Yeah. I do. If you want to shift around.
Mm-hmm. So one thing I do want to share
early to bed. Early to bed.
I will share this habit because I think it's important. I'd say it's the most important habit that I've embraced in my life. And I don't sleep with my phone in my room.
So like, where'd you put it last night?
It was up on the.
On the dresser?
On the dresser. Nice. So I don't have access to my phone while I'm in bed. Because what do you do for an hour? Scroll, right?
Whatnot. I don't. But I sleep with mine by my bed because I have kids.
Yeah.
But and just in case, like, I have their settings, so it would ring. But otherwise, it's white noise. But that's a great
practice. So for me, it, that's been really impactful. Because when I'm at home, it's in my office. So I have an alarm clock. So I put my phone to bed, and what that has done is it's trained my body that when I get in bed, we go to sleep. You know, before that, a lot of people spend time on their phone and they're doom scrolling.
You don't even watch TV? Nice. That's pro move. Mm-hmm. That's pro style.
No tech in the bedroom.
No blue light.
Nice. And so that's just helped me, A, not fill my mind with junk before bed, and B, it just helps me fall asleep a lot earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For sure.
So I'm getting better sleep.
Love it.
And I'm addicted to my phone. So what happens in the morning when my alarm goes off, there's this curious, like, oh, I went to bed at 8, you know, well, who texted me? What's going on?
What DMs did I get?
So it kind of gets me out of bed because I'm kind of like, oh, I want to go check my phone. And so it actually gets me up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, you know, do my supplement, Athletic Greens and cold plunge. And then I go straight to the gym and then do the sauna there. Then come home. And you know what app I love? Othership.
I've never heard of it.
It's a breathwork app.
Okay.
Incredible.
Okay.
Right. Incredible. And so
you do some breathwork?
Yeah. They have 3 minute to hour sessions and everything in between.
Nice.
They have really good music. And so I'll do a little breathwork, you know, before I do my journal session. And just gets me, you know, again, trying to change my state. Right. Yeah. I want to get in the good state. And so I'll do a breathwork session before I start my coaching calls.
Oh, that's so smart. Good. Yeah. Yes. It's like, it's that intention and tuning in we did before we started. Yeah. I spent so many years like podcasting and stuff and not doing that. And then I'm like, why? Why am I not tuning into the moment, you know?
Yeah.
So that breathwork is really beautiful. Anything else? What else?
Yeah. You know, I have my caffeine routine.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
So learned this from Huberman, but he talked about how if you delay your caffeine intake for at least 30 minutes after you wake up, your adenosine goes through your system. Adenosine is the chemical in your brain that makes you feel tired, makes you kind of feel sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you drink caffeine first thing when you wake up, it just blocks the adenosine. And so when their caffeine wears off, you'll get a flood in the afternoon and you crash, which
yeah.
will make you feel tired. It says if you wait 30 minutes to an hour or go get a workout in first, it kind of flushes all your adenosine out and then you drink caffeine. So when your caffeine wears off in the afternoon, you don't crash.
Nice.
And mm-hmm. so that was one of those helpful tools from Andrew Huberman that like was like a magic,
nice.
A magic in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do a cold brew protein adaptogen mushroom whatever concoction in the morning.
Of course
after my workout.
Yes.
And
I love that.
Then we just rip the coaching calls.
And then you rip the coaching calls.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, we're getting close on time. So
yeah.
I want to turn it over to you right now and just say, ask you, is there anything that we missed or anything that was really on your heart today that maybe we didn't get to or something that you want to reiterate?
Yeah, I think for me, one thing I've been really leaning into is like the core foundation of whether you're really into spirituality or really into psychedelics or really into yoga or really into meditation or really into whatever your thing is, I really believe that it comes down to, am I a force for good?
Mm-hmm.
And am I joyful and pleasant to be around? I think it's as simple as it gets. Focusing on those two things has made my life a lot easier. Rather than being like, is my meditation deep enough? Is my
big time
ayahuasca practice gone? Have I gone deep enough? And am I
or have I done
enough?
All my habits today?
Yeah, have I
and,
done?
And holding yourself to this yeah. standard, and then you're beating yourself up. And
yeah.
then are you really pleasant to be around? Yeah. Are you serving the world? Yeah. And the answer is no.
Yeah. No, Mike, I'll finish this. Michael Singer says it best. He says, the highest path you can walk is that every moment that you interact with is better off because you did. And I think that's as simple and as beautiful as you can put it. Like, is every moment better off because I was there?
Well, that's a beautiful goal
mm-hmm.
to put at the top of our list.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So thank you for everything that you shared today.
Yeah.
I really particularly loved your habits about the way you write your goals and things like that, because I kind of grapple with getting specific on my goals. And so that really speaks to me because I don't think I've done that for a long time. Mm-hmm. I've been more in that detachment mode of flow and not trying to figure it out. And yet I love goal setting. So mm-hmm. I love a good list. So I think I'm going to start using that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so I'm excited for that. And just all that you shared and just this beautiful book that you've written. Everyone can still get this book.
Amazon.
And I'm going to put the link will be in the show notes. But if they're interested in working with you or joining Alchemy, can you share how everyone can find you?
Yeah, I'm only really active on Instagram.
Okay.
So @Doug_Cartwright.
Mm-hmm.
And I answer all my DMs. So if you want to
personally,
come by, personally.
Oh, I'm impressed. That's
yeah.
beautiful. Come you don't have an assistant like
in.
Sneaking in there.
I have an assistant on the Alchemy on the page.
Ah,
yeah.
Got
so
it.
They're on the business page, but mm-hmm. I run the personal. So
good. And you are responsive because after yeah. we met, we ended up chatting some. And
yeah.
So I'm just so happy that we made this happen. Let me ask you one last thing. So we tried to do a podcast like a year mm-hmm. ago when mm-hmm. after we first met
mm-hmm.
and we're both, you know, singer heads or whatever you want to call it. And how different do you think, you said you have exponential change. How different do you think even our recording a year ago would be like to now?
Oh, it would have been very different.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think it'd have been really different.
Yeah.
I don't know how it would have been, but it wouldn't have been, you know, if we waited one more year from today.
We will. Okay. It's a date.
It would have been different
I'll
again.
See you then.
Yeah.
Is it an inner peace? Do you feel like you've evolved more into your own peace? Is that it? Cause you do seem to have that, like, you know, more peaceful meditative spirit. Mm-hmm. Like I can sense that. Do you think that's it? What do you think it is?
Yeah, I think the focus of my work has always been personal work
mm-hmm.
has been I'm okay with what happens.
Mm-hmm.
That's the goal. Like regardless of what happens externally in the world and relationships and finances and family and friends and career, I can handle it. I am okay with what happens. Rather than going out and trying to fix everything to be the way that you think that you should, can Doug become the type of person that can be okay regardless of what happens? Mm-hmm. And so that's where I kind of like really focus on my work is I can handle this. I can handle this. I'm okay with what happens.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a beautiful state to be in too.
It's a constant, I mean, it requires constant work. I'm not there. Just so you know, I'm not there.
No, don't be fooled. Yeah,
don't be fooled. I'm not there. Yeah. But that's the goal.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Yeah.
So beautiful. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. I'm so glad we made it work.
I love the vibe. The vibe's great. Oh,
good. I'm so glad. Yeah. I'm so glad. I love your vibe. And I highly recommend everyone order Holy Shit, We're Alive. And then the still to be written sequel, Holy Shit, We're Still Alive. Mm-hmm. So yes.
For now.
For now. Yeah. For now. Now yeah. What? And then it could be for now.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, everyone. Check out Doug. I'll have everything in the show notes. Thank you again. And thank you so much for being here. It's my honor to serve in this way and in every way that I can. And it like truly, I mean that so much. I'm just so grateful. And I love showing up for these. I love sharing voices. I love learning. And I am okay, whatever happens. Mm-hmm. We all are. That's getting me in the feels right now. So anyway, I love you so much. Thank you for being here. Do all the things. If you can, please rate, review, subscribe, all that stuff. Subscribe to my newsletter. I'll keep you up to date on anything else and anything happening with Fight for Her as well. So I love you so much. Thank you again, Doug. And thank you to you for being here. Till next time.
This has been the Amy Edwards Show from Overcome Studios. Remember to rate, review, and subscribe. And thank you so much for being here. Sign up for our newsletter at amyedwards.com.